Gentlemen, let's open up to the Mishnah on Daf Beis Amud Aleph in Masechet Sanhedrin, and we're going to speak a little bit today about what's called a Shor HaNiskal, and the part of the Mishnah that we're focusing on is in the wide lines of the Mishnah. If you count down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down. Now the purpose of our Shia today is to present a lot of Mar Makomos. We're going to look into a number of different sources, starting from the Mishnah, going to the Gemara, to the Rashi, to the Rambam, and to the Poskim. Tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, we'll try to sew this all together and put it into a picture. So this is part one of a two-part series. The Mishnah says the following. Shor HaNiskal B'Esrim U'Shlosha. The Mishnah goes through the various cases and how many judges are required in each case. And in the case of Dini Nefashos, of capital crimes, the Mishnah establishes we need what's called a Sanhedrin Aktana, which is made up of 23 judges. Now, in this particular case, we're dealing with a judgment against an animal, and the animal gored and killed a human being, at least according to the accusation. And we're going to bring in two witnesses to testify that that indeed happened. And if we accept the Edim and we rule against the Shor is going to be put to death by Skila, hence it's called the Shor HaNiskal, for killing a human being. And that judgment requires a Beis Din of 23 judges. And that's a little bit surprising to us, because to consider the Shor as a Dini Nefashos case, very odd. You know, with the Torah, so to speak, having a lot of compassion here over the animal. So if you're a member of the ASPCA, you know, in favor of animal protection, so this is a good Mishnah to quote. The Mishnah says you can't judge the animal to death unless you have 23 judges. And the Mishnah derives this from a Yalfusa, Shenemar Hashor Yisakel, Vegam Ba'olav Yumas. The Torah tells us in Parashas Mishpatim that if a shor goes out and gores a human being and kills, then the owner of the shor should be put to death in addition to the shor. Now that doesn't make any sense. The owner of the shor might be guilty of negligence, but that's not a capital crime. So why did the Torah add this phrase, Vegam Ba'olav Yumas? So the Mishnah says that this Gam Ba'olav Yumas is coming to create a hekesh, and just like if the owner of the shor would be tried in a capital case, we would require 23 judges in order to condemn him to death, so too the shor himself requires, like his owner, if the owner was being tried in a capital case, the shor requires 23 judges as well. Kishem Shemisas Bailim, just like if the Bailim themselves, the human being, were in judgment, he would be Chayav Misa only in front of a court of 23 judges. Kach Misas Hashor. So we have this Hekesh now between Misas HaBailim and Misas Hashor. Now, just to throw out a number of questions that we have to analyze as we go through this sugya. Number one, the question is, what if the shor is not owned by a human being? For example, we have something called a shor hamidbar, a shor that runs through the deserts and nobody owns it, or a shor shel hefker. We might have a case of a shor that was owned by someone, but the owner died and he left absolutely no Yarshim. How's it possible for a Jew to die and leave no Yarshim?
A ger,
correct. So a ger shemes, v'ein lo Yarshim, let's say he was never married and so forth, then none of his biological relatives are related to him according to the halacha. He's kikot shenol adami, and therefore his shor after his death becomes a shor shel hefker. In the light of this equation of kimisas bailim kach misas hashor, I wonder, I'm thinking out loud, and we're going to get to this in Rishim later, what happens to a shor that has no bailim? And you could go in one of two ways. You can either say that in this case, we can kill him with a smaller bez than a lower court, maybe made up of three judges, or maybe we can kill him if the shor is guilty of killing someone even without a bez din, without any judgment at all. We don't know. The Gemara later on is going to have another question. What happens in the case of a shor that's owned by a Kohen Gadol? The Mishnah later on says that you cannot judge a Kohen Gadol unless you have the highest Beis Din, which is made up of 71 judges. Shall we say that if his shor is guilty of a crime of killing a human being, we can only judge the shor to death in front of a Beis Din of Kemisas Abaylim, just like the Kohen Gadol himself who owns the shor could only be put to death in front of a Beis Din of 71, so too the shor in this case can only be put to death in a Beis Din of 71. Now we can ask another question. Is it possible that in certain cases, the shor, because it represents a danger to human life, should be put to death immediately, even without a Beis Din? For example, we're going to talk about a very dangerous serpent, a nachash. And if you're going to wait till this nachash puts someone to death, and until we can judge him as a shor haniskal in front of a court of 23 judges, I mean you're going to imagine what the damage is going to be. Then we could talk about another case of shor haniskal, in a case of a shor that was used in a sodomy in experience, where it was used in a kind of a relationship with a man or a woman, and that shor is also considered a shor haniskal. Do the dinim of shor haniskal that we see here in our Mishnah apply in those cases as well? The Torah in the Parsha Mishpatim is addressing the case of a shor that killed a human being. Let's go on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah now records a three-way machlokas about animals other than a shor. Hazeev veHa'ari, Hadov, Hanamer, VaBardalis. What's common to all these cases, we have five different animals that are listed here, is they're all called Chayo. So Chayo, we have a behema. A behema can be domesticated. Usually a Chayo is a wild beast that cannot be domesticated. And then the Mishnah adds another case of Nachash, of a serpent. Once again, the Mishnah representing now the Tanakhama, we'll soon see that Rabbi Eliezer is going to disagree, Rabbi Akiva's a third opinion. Misasan bi esrim ushlosha. Just like the Torah addresses in Parshas Mishpat the case of a shor, shor is now representative of all animals, and therefore any animal that puts a human being to death has to be put to death and is judged by the same court that makes up a court for a shor haniskal, namely esrim v'shlosha. And the chiddush here of the Tanakhama, as opposed to the other Tanoim that we're going to see in a minute, is that we don't make a difference here between an animal that's very, very dangerous. A shor is not necessarily dangerous. Again, we have a shor ha-mu'ad, but let's say the shor is not a shor ha-mu'ad. It hasn't proven itself to be a belligerent ox, then the ox can be assumed to be non-belligerent, unless proven otherwise. But in these cases, these are dangerous animals in and of themselves. Perhaps we should put them to death without even taking them into a court, and possibly even without their having killed a human being. And that's going to be the shita that we're going to see now of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer Omer kol hakodem lahargon zacha. We're not going to wait until it's too late and until we have to bring this animal, which is a destroying animal, a very dangerous animal. It's belligerent by its nature. And we're not going to wait in order to bring it to judgment, but kol hakodem zacha. And in just 1 minute, we're going to have machlokes between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, how to interpret kol hakodem zacha. So hold on, to that. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Misasan B'esrim Mishlosha. Now, the Bryce is going to tell us that Rabbi Akiva, when he says Misasan B'esrim Mishlosha, he is reiterating what we saw in the Tanakhama with the omission of one word. The Bryce is going to record the following. Rabbi Akiva Omer Hazev Vahari Vado Vanamer Vabardalis Misasan B'esrim Mishlosha. What creature did Rabbi Akiva omit? Nachash. Rabbi Akiva is the third sheet. In a sense, he is a compromise middle sheet between the Tanakam and Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is going to say that any dangerous chayo has to be put to death. Let's not wait until it's too late. The Tanakam holds no. We're going to give the status, we're going to apply the status of a shar, the same halachas of a shar, to all these animals that are dangerous. Rabbi Akiva makes the following distinction. With regard to all the chayos that are dangerous, the chachamim are correct against Rabbi Eliezer. We wait until they kill a man and until we can judge them in front of the same court that would judge a shara niskal, namely 23 judges. But with regard to a nachash, the nachash has a special status, and Rabbi Akiva says here he agrees with Rabbi Eliezer. We put the nachash to death. We're not going to wait and delay by any moment. Now, if you have a Gemara Sanhedrin, I'm going to ask you to fast forward to Daf Tesvav Amid Beis. On Daf Tesvav Amid Beis, you're going to see a Gemara which is approximately one third or almost halfway down the Amud that starts with the words Hari VeHazev. Just a shortcut, if you look at Tosfos Divrei Raskol Shar, it's above that Tosfos by approximately three lines. And the Gemara, now after quoting the Mishnah, Riv Hazev, Hadov, Hanomer, Vabardlis, Hanachash, Misosim, Esm, Shlosh, Rabbi Lezer, Omer, Kolakodim, Lahargan, Zoch. Now the Gemara quotes the Machlokas. How to interpret the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. Omer, Reish Lakish's opinion is that although Rabbi Eliezer says that kol hakodim lahargan zacha, he doesn't mean just go ahead and kill your friend's lion. You know, your friend has a lion, so you're going to kill his lion. You can't just do that. For hu shehi misu. Even Rabbi Eliezer is talking about the situation where one of these five chayos has, oh, and the same in the case of the nachash, has killed a human being. Avaloe miso, lo. No one has the rishus, the green light to kill these animals until they put someone to death. Alma, says the Gemara, what is the underlying premise of Reish Lakish? Kasavar, he holds Yeshlem Tarbus, the Yeshlem Bailam. He holds that you can domesticate these animals. Again, it's very hard for me to understand how, in Reish Lakish's perspective, you can domesticate a lion. I once held on to a baby leopard. Okay, that was in a country that's very far to the east, but my wife was too scared to do it. I did it. Anyway, but a lion, I mean, I don't know too many people that hold on to lions. Have you trained a lion? Well, there are lion trainers. So Reish Lakish holds that even the most dangerous beasts can be trained, and therefore, if somebody owns one of these animals and he claims that he has domesticated them, he's got his own backyard wolf and he's domesticated the wolf, then in such a case we have no right to take that person's wolf or that person's lion and put it to death.
Is it only if it's actually owned by somebody, or is he saying any of these?
So
he has the possibility of being, you know.
Correct. Take a look on at the last three words in Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says v'yesh lehem bailim. It means that there is an owner who claims that he has domesticated them. And in such a case, Reish Lakish says, even Rabbi Eliezer agrees that we cannot just simply put them to death. Why? Because since there's an owner of this animal who claims that he has trained the animal, therefore we're not going to allow, for the, even for the sake of the protection of society, to put these animals to death. So there are two elements here, which according to Reish Lakish will inhibit Rabbi Eliezer. Number one, the animal is owned, and therefore that inhibits us just to kill, you know, take a gun and shoot the animal that's owned by someone. Number two, the animal, at least according to the claim of the owner, has been domesticated, has been trained. When you combine those two elements together, then even Rabbi Eliezer is inhibited and will not allow you to put the animal to death. So then when did Rabbi Eliezer, in what circumstance did he argue with the Tanna Kamma? The answer is, in a case where any of these animals put someone to death, here Reish Lakish says the animal has proven itself to be a lav b'nei tarbus. It's not trainable, it's not domesticatable, and therefore we have to put it to death immediately without a bezdin. Now if you look carefully at Rashi, Rashi says Reish Lakish, it only applies if these animals have put someone to death. In the case of the Tanna Kamma, which means that we have eidim to testify that the animal killed a human being, we have to judge the animal to death in the presence of a beis din of 23 judges. Here's where Rabbi Eliezer says, no, you don't need 23 judges because we already have proof positive that this animal is a dangerous animal. Not only a dangerous animal, it's proven itself to be a killer animal. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, afal pishlo hamis. Rabbi Eliezer is not addressing the case of the Tanna Kamma, where we have witnesses to testify that the animal has put someone to death. Rabbi Yochanan says, we have to put this animal to death immediately. Let's not wait until it's too late. Alma, the Gemara says, we see that Kosovar, Ein Lehem Tarhu, Svi Ein Lehem Bailim. Ein Lehem Bailim means that the Torah, the Halacha, doesn't recognize the Bailus over a dangerous animal. As far as the halacha is concerned, you might lock up a lion, but that lion is considered hefker, and anyone is capable and allowed to put him to death. And if you take a look again at Rashi, Rashi says at the end of Yesh Lehem Tarbus, this is going back to Reish Lakish for a moment, Rashi says we're not allowed to put them to death according to Reish Lakish unless they've already killed someone. Avolim heimisu, if they've already killed someone on one occasion, according to Reish Lakish, sofan mochiach al tchiloson. The fact that they've already killed proves that the entire process of domesticating these animals was based on, at least as far as this animal is concerned, based on a false premise. Shelo elu b'nei tarbus, that these that went in and killed someone have proven themselves that they are not trainable. Now here's the punchline of Rashi. You have to underline these next three words. Rashi says v'ein tzrichin ladunam. So Rabotzai, if we know that any of these animals killed someone according to Reish Lakish and Rabbi Eliezer, would we need to take the animal into the court? No, the animal is left out of the court. Ein tzrichim ladunam. There's no need to judge them. Rabbi Yochanan says, "Afal pisha lo himisu." Even if they haven't put anyone to death, there's no need to bring the animal into Bezdin. Forget about the so-called ownership of the person. I don't care if he spent all his money buying this lion. It doesn't matter. Hefker him. Anyone could come along and put them to death. We're not going to wait until it's too late. The Gemara now has a proof from our Mishnah to support Rabbi Yochanan against Reish Lakish. Tanan, our Mishnah says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Kol HaKodim LaHargon Zocha. Anyone who kills them is Zocha. Bishlei Mil Rabbi Yochanan. According to Rabbi Yochanan, we can understand that since Rabbi Yochanan completely circumvents the need to take these animals to court, so there was never a judgment on these animals, is lamai zocha. So what is the zocha? The Gemara understands now that the word zocha should be interpreted in monetary terms. Now, what does it mean in monetary terms that a person a person takes this lion and kills the lion. I mean, the lion is dead. What do you gain from a dead lion? The Gemara says you gain a lot. La'oron. La'oron means you skin the animal. And the skin of the animal is worth a lot. You've seen this. Hunters will skin their animals. I remember we were in the Canadian Rockies, and the guide showed us a bear. The thing is, the bear was dead. It was a very dangerous animal. But they had skinned the bear, and you saw the entire skin of the bear laid out in front of you. It was really scary looking. And she told us the story of this bear. This bear smelled a campfire in people who were camping out. And they were heating meat up. Now a grizzly bear survives on berries, but this bear, like any other bear, loves the smell of meat. It's not really healthy for the bear, but the bear eats meat. Now, once a bear eats meat, this is a musashmus that I got from a non-Jewish woman, a guide in the Rockies, and a mamasha musashmus. She says, once a bear eats meat, they have to remove the bear from anywhere near that campsite, because the bear is going to go back to the campsite, and if it doesn't find meat, it's a very dangerous animal. It's not a lot. It's not a bentarbus. So they took the animal and they dropped it off at a distance of hundreds of kilometers away. The next night, the bear was back at the same campfire. The following day, they decided to take it 2,000 kilometers away, and the bear was on its trek, going back 2,000 kilometers to eat the meat. Until finally, had no choice, had to put the bear to death. So that's what taiva is all about. You know, once you get, you know, once you enjoy the taiva, that's it. You're in it for life. So again, what's going to be if you kill this animal? What do you gain from it? You gain the skin. El l'Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is saying that no one's allowed to kill this animal unless it kills a human being. So l'may zacha. What are you going to gain from this animal? Once the animal kills a human being, it has to be brought in front of a Beis Din. This is not like Rashi said before. Kevan she'misu shavinu rabbanan k'man d'gomar dinayu. Now, before we saw Rashi, we would have said that what's going to happen with this animal, let's say a lion kills a human being, we have to bring it in front of a court. And once we bring it up in front of a court, the court is going to decide that this animal, in fact, killed a human being based on the evidence we have. We have to put the animal to death. That makes it into a shor niskal. Now, what's the status of a shor niskal? Can you skin its hides and enjoy the benefit of its hide? Shor niskal is asur b'hanah. Now we're saying that even according to Rabbi Eliezer, in these cases of the animals, who are very dangerous animals, we wait until we can bring it into Beis Din and decide based on the evidence that in fact it killed a human being, and then we're going to judge it to death. We don't need, according to Rabbi Eliezer, a court made of 23 judges, and therefore we're going to put it to death even in a lower court. However, it's going to be asur b'hanah. Says the Gemara, is the Gemara Dinai, once there's a Gemara Din on this animal, let's say on this lion, that it, indeed it killed a human being, and therefore it has to be put to death. Isuri Ananinu. So what does it mean, called a Kodim Zacha? You know, you grab onto this animal, what do you gain for it? It's like a case of a Shar Niskal Yachar Gemara Din, when the Shar Niskal has been established beyond the shadow of a doubt that it killed a human being. With that Gemara Din, the Shar Niskal is also about, no, we're not allowed to even skin the animal. So what does it mean, kodem zocha? Man zocha, says the Gemara, we have to reinterpret the word. Zocha, zocha la shamayim. The first person to kill this animal, once it's killed a human being, he's zocha la shamayim, he's got credit in front of heaven. So now we have to ask the following question. These five animals, and plus the nachash according to Rabbi Eliezer, if they killed a human being, do we kill them outside of Beis Din? Meaning, do we have to go through a process of Beis Din? Or does Rabbi Eliezer agree that even in these cases we need a Beis Din, albeit not a Beis Din of Chaf Gimel? Well, Rashi understood that Ein Tzarech LaDunam. We don't have to judge them at all. They killed a human being, we have to kill them immediately, outside of the framework of Beis Din. So then why does it say in the Gemara that there was a Gemara din, and Isuri Anoninu Umay Zacha. So Rashi is going to put all his eggs, all his emphasis on Shivinu Rabbanan Kiman de Gomer Dinayim, which means to say that the Rabbanan made a takana that in the case of a dangerous animal that's already proven himself and someone has already lost their life, what we're going to consider is as if there were a Gemar Din. And what are the Rabbanan gain here? What's the nafkamina by considering it as if there were a Gemar Din? Let's take the animal into Besdin and let's go through a Din. No, we don't have to do that. The Rabbanan have already established through this enactment that there was a Gemar Din, Ki'ilu, even though we never took the animal into Besdin. How then is there a Gemar Din? What is the nafkamina? The nafkamina is Isuri Hanoah. So we need a Besdin to generate an Isur Hanoah, to decide and declare that the animal is Osur Hanoah. The Rabbanan made a takana that in the case of these dangerous animals, once they've killed a human being, according to Reish Lakish, we're going to determine that the status of this animal is identical to a Shar Niska Liacher Gmar Din, even though there was never a Gmar Din. That's the way Rashi interprets this sukkah. Now at this point, Rabosai, we're ready for a gigantic Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch did a tremendous amount of research, and he addressed the following question. What's the status of a shor that's owned by a non-Jew, and then the shor kills a human being? Do we say A or B? A is kemisoso shel bailov, kach misoso shel shor. Do we treat this shor aniskal the same way we would treat its owner if its owner was accused of a capital crime? Now let's just give a little background. The law of Ben Noach, again, this you won't find in the Western secular law books. You'll find it in the Jewish law books. But let's assume that we, the Jewish people, have control over the world, or over at least all the goyim in Eretz Yisrael. So what happens now? According to Jewish law, a guy, a non-Jew, Ben Noach, who violates any one of his seven mitzvos, is guilty of a capital crime. Which, what that means, Rabosai, is that if a Ben Noach would eat Eiver Menachai, he would pluck a limb off a live animal and eat it, he would be put to death. Are you hearing that? And again, that's going to be a major sugya in Masechta Sanhedrin. I don't know if we'll get to it in the near future because it's way later on in this Masechta. But all the laws of Ben Noach are addressed here in Masechta Sanhedrin. But that's only half the story, Rabosai. You know, most of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach really are capital crimes, and as we understand that we appreciate the capital crimes, I gave you the most extreme case of Eiver Menachai. But it's much more radical than that. How many witnesses do you need to put a Ben Noach to death in a judgment of a Ben Noach? Only one single witness. That's not so radical either, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, don't quote me on this, that in many legal systems in the West, one witness, if he convinces the jury, it could be sufficient. But here's the clincher. How many judges do you need on a court in order to condemn a Ben Noach for the violation of any one of his seven mitzvahs to death? One judge. That's all we need, is one judge. So this is called the Eid Echad U'Bedayan Echad. This is all in the sugya later on in Daf Nun Vav of Ben Noach. Now, in the case of the shor that's owned by a Ben Noach who kills a human being, if we apply the principle of our Mishnah literally, kimisoso shel shor, kach misoso, I'm sorry, kimisoso shel bailov, kach misoso shel shor, then we could put the shor to death in the same way we would put the bailim to death in a capital case, which means be'ed echad u'bedayan echad. And our Mishnah, which requires 23 judges, would not apply.
Is the halachah applied to a guy as well, that the the owner of the animal himself is not put to death in the end?
Right, the owner of the animal is not put to death. Right. Right, but we're talking about a case of one of the seven mitzvahs p'nei noach.
Yeah, but does that apply to a guy? The owner of an animal that kills is himself is not actually put to death. It says Yomus, but
no, for sure. No, so Ben Noach is only.
How can you make that comparison from that passage?
No, again, let's understand. That comparison is telling me that in a capital case where a human being is on trial, the following requirements have to be met. We take all those requirements and we apply them to a shah.
That's what we're doing. For example,
in the case of a Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol, if he was accused of a capital crime, how many judges would we need?
71.
If a shahr that's owned by a Kohen Gadol has to be a judge for killing a human being, then the Gemara is going to vacillate back and forth on this, but according to one side of the Gemara, we would need a court of 71 judges. Now, in the case of a shahr that's owned by a guy, if the guy was accused of a capital crime, then how many judges would we need in order to condemn him to death? Only one. If we apply the principle of our Mishnah literally, that whatever requirements apply to the person, to the human being who owns this animal, those requirements will apply to the shahr, then we would put the shahr of a Ben Noach to death with one aide and one judge. Okay, that's going to be the opinion of the Bach. Let's just read the Bach inside, right? So you have it here on page Yud Aleph. Hine b'shara niskal shel ben noach svir leila bach b'shut simon kuf Yud Aleph denidon b'dayon echad. He will be judged to death in the presence of one judge. Kidin ben noach atzmo shen nidon b'yed echad u'b'dayon echad. So again, the owner is a guy. The shahr is accused of killing a human being. The shahr will come into, according to the Bach, a court that has only one judge and one witness. Ukshenidon al pi dayan echad. Not only that, ye oser ba'ana. In other words, that judge is going to issue a verdict about the shahr, making the shahr into a shahr niskal. Now, what's the din of a shahr niskal until we finally push it off a high precipice? It's aser bana. And after we push it off the high precipice, can we skin the animal and enjoy its R? The answer is no. Why? Because it's aser bana. In other words, according to the Bach, there's going to be a case of a shahr niskal who undergoes a process of judgment with a horas bezdin. The bezdin is going to be made up of one single judge. And this is going to be very relevant to the discussion that we had earlier about Reish Lakish in Rabbi Eliezer, in the case of a dangerous animal, which Reish Lakish says on one occasion has killed a person, and Rabbi Eliezer in that Mishnah does not require a bezdin of 23 judges. Well, maybe what Rabbi Eliezer has in mind, like the Bach's case of a shahr shel ben noach, is that you judge him in front of one single judge, and then the ari, the lion, becomes osur b'ana, as we said before. V'achacham tzvi. So Rabbosai, we are really taking a time machine back four and a half centuries into two contemporary giants. There was the Bach, or he's a little bit before, and then a little bit later is the Chacham Tzvi. His name was Ashkenazi. Okay, the Chacham Tzvi was the final authority for the Jews in the Netherlands back four and a half centuries ago. For who cholek ala Bach? He disagrees with the Bach. Now, how can you disagree with the Bach? I mean, the Mishnah says, "Kim yisaso shel shahr." No. The Bach made a mistake. Svirle, the Chacham Tzvi holds, the Afsha Nachri Nerag Bierechud Bidayanechud, Mikomakoma Behema Einen Erregis Elbichov Gimel Ubishne Eden. Why? Okay, so now we have to introduce another principle, which is called Dio. Right? Dio means that when you derive Y from X, you are limited by the same restrictions as X. In other words, Y cannot go beyond X. In this case, he says we're going to apply the principle of Dayo. Why? Meheicha kayalfislei. What's your basis for this equation between kim misas habaylim kach misas hashar? Well, that's the pasuk that says for gambol of yumas, which is a case of a shar of Yisrael. He says the following: in the case of a shar that's owned by Yisrael, the animal could only be put to death in front of a bezdin of what?
23
judges and with two witnesses. The case in which the Torah teaches us that the animal has to be put to death according to the same high requirements of the bezdin of the bailim, of the bailim himself. Again, if he would have been accused of a capital crime, well, the parsha itself is addressing the case, the scenario of a Jewish owner. Hence, we derive the conclusion that the animal has to be put to death in front of 23 judges. Is afshar shel nachri bechav gimel? You can't tell me that you're going to lower the standards of the bezdin in the case of a shar shel nachri, and you're going to condemn the shar to death because of misasal shel bailim. Wait a minute. The whole source in the Torah for this halacha of kimisasol shel bailim, in other words, we're going to be makil, we're going to be lenient on the shar, we're going to say, well, we're not going to be able to put the shar to death unless we have 23 judges. The source for that is the case of bailim. Which bailim? Which kind of a bailim needs a bezdin of 23 judges? Only Yisrael. So then the shar shel Yisrael becomes your malamed, your X that's teaching you Y. And just like the bailim, in this case the Israel, requires we cannot condemn him to death unless we have a basin of what? 23 judges. So too the shor has to be killed in front of 23 buzzers. Says the Chacham Tzvi, it matters not whether the shor is owned by a Jew or by a guy, because this whole halacha of the Torah, you know, being lenient on behalf of the shor, that's derived from the Shar Shel Yisrael, and the Shar Shel Yisrael now sets up the standards by which we would judge the any Shar, no matter what it is.
That makes no sense. In other words, we have to be stricter for a Shar owned by a Goy than a Goy himself.
Well, again, I'm a little bit nervous about the word stricter here, Don. I'll tell you why. I understand what you mean by stricter when you say, because we're going to upgrade the number of judges.
We can condemn a human being, even though he's not a Jew, by one person, and
right,
one witness and one judge. But an ox, which is an animal owned by the Nochri,
right? Why? Because according to the Chacham Tzvi's understanding, the Torah is telling us something about a Shor HaNiskal. Focus on a Shor HaNiskal. The Torah is saying that let's be lenient vis-a-vis a Shor HaNiskal.
I'm sorry, an animal is an animal, human beings.
Again, forget about who owns the animal for a moment. Let's just talk about the Shor, correct? The Torah could be very strict about the Shor and say, you know what, let's just get one judge into Bezdin and let's condemn the Shor to death. Let's get rid of the Shor. Or the Torah could have been lenient with regard to the Shor. Forget about who owns the Shor for a moment. The Pasuk itself is going to teach us, according to the Chacham Tzvi, that the Torah had compassion on a Shor. The Shor is a little bit less guilty than a human being, if you follow my point. The Shor didn't have what you call freedom of choice. And let's be lenient. We're not going to kill the Shor just like that. We're going to raise the standards in order to be lenient on the Shor. I got a little nervous because you said stricter. We're going to be more lenient with the Shor. And unless we get the majority ruling of a Sanhedrin Akhtana, which means a Sanhedrin of 23 judges, we're not going to put the Shor to death. Says the Chacham Tzvi, well, let's see. How do we know that the Torah was more lenient in the case of a shor and raise the bar on the standard of a bezdin for condemning the shor? That we learn from the case of a Yisrael, but it doesn't matter. Even though you're deriving it from the case that the shor is owned by Yisrael, nevertheless the Torah is being lenient vis-a-vis the shor, and you can't tell me that we're going to now be stricter in the case of a shah that's owned by a guy. Why? Because we could put the we could, as you say, condemn the owner of the shah, meaning the guy, to death in front of one judge. That's not relevant to the judgment on the shah. We're now judging the shah. We're not judging the owner of the shah. What are the standards of the owner of the shah? Was the Torah makil and say we cannot condemn the shah to death unless we have 23 judges? Or was the Torah machmir and said the Torah, you know what, we're going to put the shah to death with one judge. Or maybe we don't even need a judge. Maybe we can do it outside the court. Well, the answer is, let's go back to the source. We have a principle called dayo. If the Torah gives us the standard for a judgment on a shah in one case, and that's going to be the source for the answer to our question, what are the halachas about putting a shah to death? We can't go beyond that case and now be more machmir against the shah. If the Torah was already makil on the shah, in the one single case where the Torah gave us the answer to the question, what is the best thing that is required to put the shah to death? And the answer is 23 judges, then the Torah is making, you can't come along and say, well, you know what, I'm going to derive from a Kavul Chomer that in this case of a Shar Shal Akum, we're going to put the Shar to death with the judgment of one. I'm looking at my clock and I'm just seeing, let's see if we can at least finish the end of this first presentation. The Rambam paskins in Perek Yud Mehilchas Nizkei Mamon that in the case of a shah that's not owned by anyone, it's a shah hamidbar, or a shah ager shemes vein lo yorshim, the Rambam paskins miskolim, we put it to death in front of a bezdin of 23 judges. Now wait a second, what's going on over here? There's no owner of the shah. How can you apply the principle of kimisoso shel bailim kach misoso shel shah? The Rambam in Perek Hei Milchas Sanhedrin, which John you have open in front of you, halacha beis, says ein don dini nefashos bepachos michav gimel shehein Sanhedrin aktano. Listen to the Rambam's language. Bein dini nefashos shel adam bein dini nefashos behema. In other words, the Rambam is making a blanket statement that, and he's not differentiating between who owns the shah or maybe nobody owns the shah. The Rambam says that when you put the shah to death, it requires, just like in Dini Nefashos, 23 judges. Do you hear the language of the Rambam? Ein don in Dini Nefashos bepachos michav gimel, bein Dini Nefashos adam, bein Dini Nefashos behema. It means that the Rambam, whether or not there's an owner of the shah, the Rambam says you can only judge the shah and condemn it in the presence of a bezdin, which is a Sanhedrin katana made up of 23 judges. Says the Chacham Tzvi, adding a little bit of a commentary on this Rambam, that after leslu bailim im kol ze chasa haTorah alem, the Torah had compassion on the animal, latzrichon edim v'chaf gimel, it doesn't matter whether or not the animal is owned by a Jew or even if it's not owned by anyone, the Torah had a compassion over the animal and says you can't put the animal to death. You can't just snap your fingers, you know, get yourself a judge and put him to death. Get yourself one witness and put him to death. No. The Torah had chas rachmana aleihem. And therefore the Torah says we're not going to judge and condemn the animal unless we have 23 judges. The ad kan lo komi boy leila rabbi lozo lahalon dafte zayin the shor shel kohen gadol. Remember I told you that the Gemara has two opinions about what's the status of a shor shel kohen gadol. Bekama. There, if we're going to say that since the shor is owned by a kohen gadol, how many judges, this is the sheet of Rabbi Lozer, not the Tana Rabbi Eliezer, but the Amora Rabbi Lozer, how many judges do we need in order to condemn this shor to death? 71 judges. Could you imagine what a kula that is? La kuli alayu. To say that we're going to lower the standards and be machmer on the animal and say we're going to kill the animal with one aid and with one dayan, ain't lanu. We have no source for this. On the contrary, if you have any possibility of changing the number of judges, you can be more makil on the behalf of the animal in the case of Shar Shel Kohen Gadol according to Rabbi Lazar, and you're going to jack up the requirement to 71 judges. The Sanhedrin Agadola, Rabbi Lazar, did you hear this case? The Shar is now going to be judged in front of the highest court in the land, made up of 71 judges. Now the Chacham Tzvi adds another piece to the puzzle. He says, "V'Chacham Tzvi Kosev O Dafilum Tim Tzalom De Nidom B'Dayin Echad." If you're going to tell me, like the Bach, and somehow convince yourself that the Bach is right, then in the case of a Shor Haniska that's owned by a Goy, you're going to lower the standards and be more machmir, and you're going to condemn him to death in the presence of one judge. Nevertheless, lo yeyoser b'ano, the Bach really went out on a limb here. The Bach says that this shor of a guy is oser b'ano, just like a regular shor on Iskal is oser b'ano. Says the Chacham Tzvi, how can you even think such a thought? Which means that there's a Gmar Din. You need a Bez Din to establish through its Gmar Din and Iser Hanah. Lo Matzinu, we have no basis or any source for a Gmar Din that generates an Iser Hanah unless it's a Bez Din of Chav Gimel. That's a high-powered court with a great deal of authority, the Olam Kochayu, it has an alimus, a certain power of koach. The Agmardin of a Bezdin of 23, Choshuv, it has a Hashivas to it, and it has the ability, less or maybe, to generate an Iser Hanah on the animal, even though the animal is still alive. And now you're going to tell me, Eid Echad V'Dayan Echad? How do you know, what's the source for the power of a Gmar Din, of Eid Echad and Dayan Echad, one judge, Minolim to Olin Dine? How do you know that the Torah upgraded the status of that Bezdin and that Gmar Din to give it the Chashivas lesser Bano? On the contrary, we should be more Mekil, we shouldn't be more Machmer. So now you're telling me that. So again, the Bach had two Chidushim. I should have told you when we read the Bach to underline two words in the Bach. The Bach said the following, that Hashar, if the Shar is owned by a guy, Nidon B'Dayan Echad, Kidin Ben Noach Atzmosha Nidon B'Dayan Echad, and then add this, Ukisha Nidon Alpi Dayan Echad, Ye Oser Bano. It has the full, how should I say, the full Gishpanka, how do you say in English, the full authority of power of a Gmar Din. Number one, it means that the Shar is going to be put to death. Again, there's only one judge. Number two, says the Bach, the Shar is Asur Bahana, like a Shar Haniskal. So, Rabos, I see we ran out of time. B'li Neder tomorrow, because I can't make it on Wednesday, but if you're available tomorrow, whoever could come, again, I know you have a lot of different obligations and so forth, but whoever could come at 10:30 again tomorrow, we're going to try to finish this up, or at least make a little bit more progress in it. We're going to try to analyze the machlokas between the Ramah and the Chacham Tzvi. I have to admit that at this point, my niti is in favor of the Chacham Tzvi, but then keep in mind, the Bach is operating within this equation between the Shar and the Bala Shar, which is explicit in our Mishnah. We're going to try to understand whether, according to Rabbi Eliezer, in the case of the five animals, the five chayos, that and they're guilty of killing a person, do we just simply put him to death? Rashi says, Ein donu also b'fnei bezdin, we don't need a bezdin. We're going to see tomorrow, Mir Tzshen, that the Rambam seems to imply, no, we need a bezdin, but all we need is a bezdin of one judge, which is reminiscent to the Bach in the case of Shar Haniskal Shel Ben Noach. And this is going to shed a light on the case of an ownerless Shar Haniskal. Okay then? So if you could hold on to this page, that would take a headache off my head. If you can't, if you think you're going to lose the page, then just put it here in the archives, and we'll pick it up in Mirtzah Hashem tomorrow.
I understand the Rambam, he makes more sense than the other guy, but I still find it difficult that the judges feel more makel towards an ox than they do towards a human being. I know they're arguing why you have to have 23 judges. Was their attitude towards a B'nai Noach, so callous that
no
one judge will.
No, it's not. It's not. Look, we have different kinds of judgments. There's a judgment of Yisrael. There's a judgment of Ben Noach, and they work with two different regulations. The question is, what do we do with a Shoah?
I understand the distinction, but I'm still finding it difficult to wrap my 21st century head around the concept that we have to be more lenient for an ox than for a human being. I don't care if the human being's a boy or not, you know.
Right.
Still an animal versus a human being.
So let's see, as we go through the sugi, again, my purpose today was just trying to, you know, give you a little bit of a taste for the various source material, and after the dust settles, then I think we'll be in a better position to try to address your question.